This project was produced by Belong Aotearoa with the support from the J.R. Mackenzie Trust and Planet FM. The series is an exploration of the employment journey for people of migrant and former refugee background in Aotearoa. It features conversations with people of lived experience and experts who share with us their stories and their own perspectives.
Welcome to Pass the Mic. I'm your host, Shabnam Nisha. And with me in studio is our producer, Gina Gonzalez. And I'd like to welcome our guest here today, Eugene.
Yay.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me here.
Yes, Thank you. How was your trip over this morning?
Oh, I just bussed.
Oh, excellent.
I just bussed. I'm a big fan of the public transport. But then I'm also a big advocate for better public transport.
Oh, that's good.
So it took me about 1 hour and 22 minutes, but it's okay.
You got here.
Yes.
All right. So tell us, when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, that's a very nice question. Right. Actually, when I was a kid, I was actually thinking of being a teacher, given that both of my parents are university professors. So I grew up watching my mom do her postgrad degrees. Even my dad as well. He has a postgrad degree as well. And then I grew up running around the halls of the university, specifically Bulacan State University in the Philippines. And so because I was really inspired by my mom and my parents' work, I thought, oh, I want to be a teacher as well. And I kept on asking my mom, can you tell the dean of the faculty to tell him that one day I'll be working here as well?
Oh,
wow. She was so proud. But yeah, I wanted to be a teacher. But then, of course, life happens and things change.
Okay, so you've already answered my next question. You are originally from the Philippines.
Yes.
And so tell us, what brought you here to Aotearoa?
Well, I think to answer that is to acknowledge the economic class that I came from. I came from a very middle class family.
Yeah.
Both of my parents are intellectuals and they work as professors in the university. And so I was privileged enough to have a good education. I have a bachelor's degree in journalism.
Wow.
And then when I graduated, I worked as a writer for a nonprofit organization in the Philippines. And I thought I wanted to do more in life. I enjoyed my work at the time because I was privileged enough to work with the social workers of that organization and go to different marginalized communities in the Philippines. But then I was working 7 days a week and I was just being paid like just a little above minimum wage. And I thought, I believe there's a better life for me.
Yeah.
In overseas. And so through the support, financial, emotional support of my parents, I was able to come here as an international student.
Nice.
Because at that time, it was the easiest pathway for me to come here.
Yeah.
You know, so I studied here in New Zealand, postgrad diploma on digital marketing. I was a full-time student, but also a part-time housekeeper.
Ooh.
I worked as a housekeeper. That was my very first job. And on the weekends, I also do a lot of volunteer work with different community organizations. Because when you're a newcomer, they're going to ask what they call Kiwi experience.
Yeah, that's right.
And you only get to have Kiwi experience if you volunteer, you know. So I have a part-time job as a housekeeper. I was a full-time student. I was volunteering with different organizations. And then when I graduated, I actually worked in a digital marketing agency.
Yeah.
Particularly in the tourism industry.
Yeah.
It was very corporate. It was very corporate. But then because it's not within my nature, I didn't really think of me thriving in a corporate industry.
Yeah.
I think it showed in my performance.
Yes.
So I got fired from that corporate. I got fired from that digital marketing agency literally 2 weeks before New Year. I was out of work from literally third week of December in 2018 up to first week of February. Yeah. And the only reason I was able to survive was the food pack from Migrant Action Trust.
Yeah.
Because Migrant Action Trust was one of those community organizations that I was volunteering with.
Right. So when you were studying here in New Zealand, you were also working part-time as well.
Yes, I was working part-time.
Which year was it that you arrived here?
I arrived here in 2017.
Yes. Oh, wow. And you've already started your employment journey there as well.
Yes.
It got fired on the way too.
But then at that time, I was really bitter. I was really bitter because the condition, for example, if you're an international student and you dream of staying here longer, the condition was to find a job that is relevant to what you have studied. And when I got that job, I thought, oh, I hit the jackpot. My future here is now, you know, solid because I'm in the field. But then, you know, it's not really me, you know, working in a corporate setting. It's not me. And so at that time, I was really bitter. But then looking back at that memory now, I'm actually grateful. Yeah. I'm actually grateful that I'm not there anymore and they have let me go because I'm not serving my purpose there. At the same time, it's not me.
Yeah.
And right now I can say that I'm happy with where I am right now.
So your New Zealand studies, whatever you studied here, wasn't quite helpful in getting you the employment that you wanted. Is that right?
It was helpful in a sense that it was my stepping stone.
Yeah.
Okay. My stepping stone, my entry to Aotearoa. But, you know, it's not really helpful in a sense that it's not leading me to where I want to be.
That's right.
In life.
What came after the agency?
Okay, so when I first entered that company, that agency, it was my first ever white space experience.
Yeah.
Because even though they pride themselves as, oh, we're very diverse here. We have workers here. We have office mates here who are not white, but actually majority of them are white.
Yeah.
And so it was hard for me to adjust with that lifestyle, with that culture, because for some reason, at that time, you know, it's just feels awkward to exist in white spaces, even with, queer white spaces, because I don't know, they have assumptions, and yeah, it was hard, not to mention that it's also corporate, so it's like double whammy for me. And coming from a background of doing NGO work in the Philippines, you know, I don't really see myself thriving in a corporate setting.
Yeah.
It was just me doing my best to cement my longer stay in New Zealand. I just have to do it. At that time, I just have to do it. You know, I just have to through this. But then, you know, it showed, you know, I can't really hold on to that pretense that I belong here. No, I don't belong here. I don't belong in a corporate setting. I belong where the people are. I belong in employment environment where I get to be with the people, serve the people.
And how was your treatment from the employers and the co-workers that you came across during that time, since you were so new and studying at the same time?
It was a shock. We're thinking about my time as a housekeeper. It was a shock because I came from an office type of work in the Philippines. So even though it's an NGO, I was working in an office. And then doing housekeeping, It was jarring. It was daunting. And it was quick. For example, I was working as a housekeeper in a motel. So my work starts from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Yeah.
You know? And at that time, I only have like basic skills in cleaning.
That's right. Yeah.
I didn't have any experience cleaning in like as a job in the Philippines. It was hard. I can totally say it was quite demoralizing.
Oh, wow.
It was demoralizing, you know, and it was easy for me to think that, oh, what am I doing in New Zealand? Is it actually the right decision for me to come here? Because I'm not even sure if I'm doing the right thing. But then I guess it was also a good opportunity for me to understand the situation in New Zealand it comes to how the working class is actually thriving here. Now, here in New Zealand, you know, if there's an opportunity for people to work, they grab it because, you know, they have to survive. Work. And it really humbled me, that experience.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I come from a migrant background as well, and I kind of felt the same way too.
Mm.
But did you have any memory of a special person that you feel like helped you through your employment journey, or someone who was there to support you, or you didn't have any of that?
I'm really grateful that I'm the type of person who goes out there and reach out for opportunities.
Okay.
So for me, the best people, the people who really helped me in my employment journey, was actually the community.
Yeah.
Specifically the organizations that I volunteered with. For example, the Migrant Action Trust and Migrante Aotearoa New Zealand. So because not only they have given me the opportunity to volunteer, they also gave me the opportunity to connect with people who gave me vital tips, vital advices on how to actually navigate through the employment structure, employment journey here in New Zealand. But it took me a lot of decisive initiative, no? And for a lot of migrants, it can be hard.
Yes.
It can be challenging. I'm grateful that somehow, even though I'm Filipino and my primary language is Filipino Tagalog, I'm also quite fluent with English, no? And it literally gave me the opportunity to thrive. But for a lot of migrants here, English is not their primary language.
Yeah, that's right.
And they need further support. No, and so we have to open up our arms and extend support to them.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. So where are you now? How did you first become involved in advocacy in social justice?
So I can say that it came from my history back in the Philippines. Back in the Philippines, I was involved in different student protests inside uni, fighting against budget cuts, fighting for student rights, fighting for university press freedom, no?
Wow.
Yes, and then because I was studying, I have a bachelor's degree in journalism, knowing journalism in the Philippines, there's a lot of repression when it comes to press freedom, a lot of challenges for journalists to thrive and to hold on for the truth, no?
Really?
And fight for the truth. And so
censored
and a lot, the Philippines became one of the worst countries for journalists.
Oh, wow.
Because more than 10 years ago, there was a massacre and majority of them were actually journalists. But anyway, so I chose to work in an NGO as a writer. As a writer and working in an NGO as a writer, no, it gave me the opportunity to work not only with social workers, with the social workers of that NGO, but also go and reach out to the marginalized communities in the Philippines. And you know, when you're a middle class, you have that, preconceived notion that, oh, people are poor because they're lazy. People are poor because they chose to be poor.
Yeah.
You know, and even though I was active in student activism, I wasn't really exposed to the greater poor people in the Philippines, you know.
Yeah.
And my time with that NGO, they gave me the opportunity to be with the people. And that's when I realized that their poverty was actually caused by different factors.
Yeah.
You know. And then when I moved here looking for a better life, you know, I consciously chose to volunteer with an organization that works with migrants because I wanna continue that. I wanna continue my journey with the people. Different setting.
Different
but
setting.
Still with the people. And so working with Migrante as a volunteer and as their member actually gave me the opportunity to understand the root causes of migration.
Yes.
You know, so the popular narrative is migrant workers chose to come here and the migrant workers are stealing the jobs here. But actually, we view the presence of migrants here as a result of forced migration from their home countries.
Well, you know, you sound like you knew what you wanted to do when you come here and you found your way to it. Do you think other migrants end up in the jobs where they don't belong due to their visa?
Maybe? Yes, definitely. Yeah. Because of a lot of exploitation. And I want to say that the exploitation doesn't start here in Aotearoa.
Yeah.
It starts from their home countries. The exploitation starts from there.
Yeah.
Because of dodgy employers and dodgy visa agents. So literally, last week, you know, this November 2024, we have found out that 11 Filipino migrant workers were living inside container vans.
Wow, 11.
11.
Which 11. Area was this?
In Takanini, Tamaki, Magoro. And so, some of my colleagues from Migrante visited these workers and actually took videos, you know? And then I visited them personally and I was doing a lot of interviews with them, just knowing their story and listening to them. Turns out these workers, before they came here in New Zealand, they contacted an employer with a small labor hire company and asking for jobs. Because in the Philippines, there are no decent jobs.
Yeah.
There are no decent jobs with livable wages in the Philippines. And so these people are very desperate to provide for their families. And it so happened that they asked the wrong person. And the person was like, yeah, of course we have jobs here. Come and pay me. Come and pay the placement fee and then I'll process your papers.
Wow.
Each of these workers paid 10,000 New Zealand dollars.
10,000?
10,000 New Zealand dollars. In Philippine peso, it's 350 pesos, 350,000 pesos. It's almost half a million.
Wow.
Just for the placement fee. For the placement fee.
That's a lot.
So some of the workers paid 270,000 pesos. Some of the workers paid 370,000 pesos. For the workers to achieve or to reach that amount, majority of them went to lending companies and loaned some money. One of them sold his property and house just so that he can pay for the placement fee.
Wow. No.
And then they went here, they arrived here. They never really got a 40-hour work guaranteed. They were only guaranteed 30 hours. And even that 30 hours it wasn't actually met properly by the employer. So these workers, according to their contract, they're entitled to get paid $29 per hour.
Yeah.
But then the employer was like, oh, actually the 10,000 New Zealand dollars you paid me was actually not enough. So I have to cut some money from your payment. And they're getting paid $22 per hour. Below minimum wage, right?
Yes, that's below.
And then one of the workers were like, actually, ma'am, I never really got paid 30 hours guaranteed. Just January, I only got paid 8 hours for the entire month.
So these 11 workers in the container, what are they doing for their jobs? Like,
so the labor hire company is a small company that provides construction services.
Okay.
Construction services like concrete paving, and they take a lot of small projects now.
Okay.
But then these workers are being forced to work above 40 hours.
Wow.
And they're not even getting paid the 30 hours guaranteed. And they're not only they're being economically exploited by the employer, they're also being psychologically and emotionally exploited.
Yeah.
Because in our culture, in the Filipino culture, no, we have a very toxic culture of utang na loob, or that sense of massive gratitude towards the person or towards the people who help us to achieve something.
Yeah.
And it can be manipulative.
Yeah.
Especially if the person was just outright evil, no. So they're being forced to work more than 40 hours. They're not even being paid. They're 30 hours guaranteed. And then these workers were actually living inside the property of the employer. So imagine the hold of this employer to them. No, what I am proud of these workers is that they collectively decided to file a case against this employer. So they filed a case last October 24 against this employer.
Yeah.
But it also meant that they have to move out from the accommodation that the employer provided. And so they were forced to move out from the accommodation and move and live in their cars. So these workers were living in their cars. Luckily, one of them met a sympathetic Kiwi with a Filipino wife. And the Kiwi was like, I want to help, but I don't have the accommodation for you. However, I have three empty container vans sitting in my lot. Do whatever you want with that. And so they have decided that instead of them living in their cars, they thought that living in container vans was actually better than living in their cars. And they decided, you know, that decision was good because later on their cars were actually pulled out by the car dealers.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't continue paying for the cars. No? Mm. So right now, 11 workers sharing three cars. And they have to be smart. That's why when we first saw the situation, we thought that it was the employer who forced them to live in their, in the container vans.
Right.
But actually, it was the only option that was given to them. Otherwise, they will be living inside their cars and eventually become totally homeless. Yes, we are grateful to the person who helped them, but we also have to look at it as a manifestation of a systemic problem.
That's right.
A systemic problem that caused exploitation against these migrant workers. Mm. These migrant workers are clearly imported here as cheap and docile labor.
That's right.
And they are asked to build houses, but we don't even provide them a house for them.
Yeah.
Like just, you know, humane accommodation for them.
That's right.
Right now, Migrant Action Trust and Migrante are extending support in advocating for their rights and welfare. Yeah.
That's really good to hear that they are being supported.
In the law, if you're an accredited employer importing foreign workers, migrant workers, you're the one who needs to pay for all the processes.
Yeah, that's right.
The migrant worker will not pay anything. It's your responsibility. But what happens is because we have a very fickle system in giving accreditation, we're literally giving away accreditation to dodgy employers, profiting out of the desperation from migrants, It's even worse when you're Indian. Because we've met Indian migrants paying 30,000 to 50,000 securing work. You know, these dodgy employers asking them 30,000 to 50,000 as quote and unquote placement fee. I've spent my entire life as a migrant here advocating for migrant rights and welfare.
Yeah.
And so I can say, I will stand by my statement that these migrants who are coming in here, they are being forced to come here because there are no jobs in their home countries.
Mm-hmm.
They're literally being displaced from their land. We're seeing wars after wars. And we're seeing the effects of climate crisis.
That's right. What would you like to see being done different?
I would like to see more support to them.
Yeah.
And also more honesty from the system. We need to be more honest with them, and that honesty should come from the top.
Yes.
I would like to see no exploitation, because I can see a lot of exploitation, not just against migrant workers, but even those who are coming in here who are on working holiday visa or who are on international student visa. Back in 2017, we were just coming out from the peak of educational scam, where private education providers, dodgy visa agents, and even the Immigration New Zealand selling hundreds to thousands of international student visas to migrants and giving them false hope that if you come here in New Zealand and study this 1 year course, it's going to be easy for you to settle here. You know, it's going to be your golden ticket for a better life. But what they didn't disclose to these migrants is they're offering this opportunity to literally thousands of them. And so back in 2016, 2017, literally we have a massive surplus of international students studying the same courses, studying business, studying marketing.
Yeah.
And we have a surplus of international students studying that, but we don't even have jobs for them. If there were jobs for them, these jobs were not actually going to point them to residency. They were profiting out from the desperation and from giving false hopes to these people. And that was pre-COVID.
Yeah.
At that time, we thought, this is really bad.
Yeah.
This is really, really bad. And personally, I thought it's not going to get worse from here. But actually, coming out from COVID,
yes,
it got so much worse. And we shouldn't treat education as something we can export them. You know, we're treating education as if it is something that we can export and we can package in a way that we can extract more profit from these migrants. You know,
because that's a lot of fees that goes in. It's international money.
International money. So I would like to see the system not exploiting people for profit.
Yeah.
You know, and more actionable steps to punish exploitative employers.
Agree.
Exploitative employers, exploitative visa agents from here in New Zealand and from their counterparts in the sending countries.
Mm-hmm.
We have to change the narrative when it comes to talking about migrant issues. When we talk about migrant issues here, well, at least in the spaces that I've been to, when they talk about migrant issues, they talk about migrant issues as if, oh, these migrants are coming here. And we need to support them. We need to, like, you know, or either that or either, oh, migrants are coming here to steal our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look at it as a systemic manifestation. It's a manifestation of a systemic problem. It's forced migration.
Yeah.
And what are the causes of forced migration? It can be climate crisis,
mm-hmm.
you know, or more than likely, it was also caused by neoliberal policies
yeah.
in their sending countries. So what I can share is my experience back in the Philippines. No, in the Philippines, since the birth of International Monetary Fund and World Bank, we have been under neoliberal policies for 8 years.
Yeah.
And neoliberal policies have liberalized our economic policies that actually caused privatization and deregulation, no, of businesses, of employment in general in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And those steps attack the rights of workers.
Mm-hmm.
Majority of workers in the Philippines are casual workers.
Yeah.
They're not even full-time workers.
Mm.
And so it's not just happening in the Philippines. It's happening majority in the global south. And because people are desperate for work, it creates another problem called the labor export policy, where it's like, where workers are systematically being exported as cheap and docile labor to different countries. So we have to see it that way. You know, neoliberal policies, labor export policy, and now local exploitation on migrant workers.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a lot to take in. Yeah,
yeah, I know. You can edit it.
No. No, yeah. It's great. Yeah. I mean, thank you for sharing that. I'm just loving listening to you. Yeah, so nowadays your employment looks like you're helping people, which is great, you know, especially situations like that. So what's next? Like, what are your next steps in your career?
Next steps in my career?
Yeah. Tell us about that.
A lot of people are asking me that, actually, especially my family.
I'll be your family, too.
my family, we had difficult conversations. Majority of what I am doing comes from activism.
Yes.
And in the Philippines, if you're an activist, you're being repressed, you know, by the state. Literally, I have colleagues from the Philippines who are being incarcerated, forcibly abducted, being charged by trumped up charges now. So they're coming from a place of fear now. My parents were like, what are you doing in New Zealand? You actually went there to escape this life.
Yeah.
But then you plunged deeply into your activism. Like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
We had so many difficult conversations now. But then right now they're chill with this, you know, and they actually grew appreciation with what I'm doing. Of course, they're still asking, you know, what would you like to do in your career? Would you like to do this forever and everything? I guess right now I'm quite happy with what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I get offers from different unions.
Yeah.
And you know, unions, they pay much more than this work. But then I wouldn't leave this job just for that, you know, because I know that, you know, this is where I belong to.
Oh,
know?
That's right. I can relate to that actually, because, yeah, you know, we work with people as well, and you go home and you humble yourself and you sleep well, you know, knowing that you've helped someone along the way. So, where can we find you if we want to reach out to you, Eugene?
If people want to reach me out, they can go to our website.
Yes.
And email, or they can catch me on the street protesting for Palestine.
Yay!
And for Toy Tutitiriti. So.
Yay. I know, that's why I saw you last time. Oh, that's great. Well, now we know where to find you, Jane.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings us to the end of our episode today.
Nice.
Thank you for joining us today, Eugene. We loved hearing from you, and we loved, you know, your passion that you bring to our table today has been wonderful. And thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you for sharing this space with us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you. You know, we've been all there as our extended family as well. Thank you so much. And yes, it's very nice to know that it's not just us.
And with that, Eugene and Gina, we are out.
Thank you.
Ka kite anō. That was our Pass the Mic episode. Check out the rest of our season dedicated to the employment experience of migrants and former refugees. Share your favorite episodes and subscribe to our channel. If you haven't already, go back to our first Pass the Mic series, which highlights a range of ethnic experiences in Aotearoa. Our employment season is a collaboration between Belong Aotearoa, Foundation North, and Planet FM, with assistance from Voice of Aroha. You can find the link to these organizations in the bio.
Your interests on planetaudio.org.nz.
She loves me, but I don't fit her society. Lord have mercy on a boy down in the boondocks.
Now every night I watch the light in the house up on the hill. Well, I love a little girl who lives up there, and I guess I always will. But I don't dare knock on her door, 'cause her daddy is